Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Class Certification, Stipulations, and Appellate Jurisdiction Edition. I'm your host, Christopher Goffis. On June 12, 2017, the Supreme Court decided Microsoft Corp. v. Baker. Plaintiffs brought a class action lawsuit against Microsoft Corporation alleging that, during gameplay on the Xbox 360 video game console, discs would come loose and get scratched by the internal components of the console, sustaining damage that then rendered them unplayable. The district court, deferring to an earlier denial of class certification entered by another district court dealing with a similar putative class, entered a stipulated dismissal and order striking class allegations. Despite the dismissal being the product of a stipulation, that is, an agreement by the parties, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit determined that the parties remained sufficiently adverse for the dismissal to constitute a final appealable order. The Ninth Circuit therefore concluded it had appellate jurisdiction over the case. Reaching the merits, that court held that the district court had abused its discretion and therefore reversed the stipulated dismissal and order striking class allegations and remanded the case. The question before the Supreme Court was whether a federal court of appeals has jurisdiction to review an order denying class certification after the named plaintiffs voluntarily dismissed their claims with prejudice. By a vote of 8-0, the court reversed the decision of the Ninth Circuit and remanded the case. In an opinion by Justice Ginsburg, the court held that federal courts of appeals lack jurisdiction under 28 U.S.C. Section 1291 to review an order denying class certification, or, as in this case, an order striking class allegations, after the named plaintiffs have voluntarily dismissed their claims with prejudice. Justice Ginsburg's majority opinion was joined by Justices Kennedy, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Thomas filed an opinion concurring in the judgment, in which the Chief Justice and Justice Alito joined. Justice Gorsuch took no part in the consideration or decision of the case. And now, to discuss the case, we have Theodore H. Frank, who is Senior Attorney and Director of the Center for Class Action Fairness at the Competitive Enterprise Institute.
The underlying case was Baker versus Microsoft, a putative class action brought in federal court alleging defects in the manufacture of Xbox 360s and the way they handled the CDs that were used to provide software and like that. And the case, though, is all about procedural tactics. And I think it's important to just sort of step back and look at the background of this. As you know, in a class action, the case is often not litigated so much on the merits as on the procedural question of whether the case can be certified as a class. If a case can be certified as a class and can proceed as a class action with hundreds of thousands or millions of class members, the case will often settle well before trial, given the risks to the defendant of proceeding on a class-wide basis. And similarly, if the case cannot be certified as a class, it's uneconomic for the plaintiffs to proceed on what's a claim for a few dollars or here maybe a few hundred dollars. So there's always that litigation over the class certification. And the question is, if the class isn't certified, well, what are your appellate rights? And in the 1970s, plaintiffs would lose their class certification motion and then say, well, this is an interlocutory decision, technically, but you should treat it as a final decision under 28 U.S.C. 1291, which provides for appellate jurisdiction, but only for final decisions, not for interlocutory decisions, on the theory that when the court denies class certification, it's the death knell of the litigation, and that makes it final. In 1978, the Supreme Court rejected this concept in Coopers and Librand versus Livesay and said, we the death knell doctrine is no good. 1291 means what it says. You need a final decision. No interlocutory appeals. This seemed to be a little harsh, and they eventually amended the federal rules, Rule 23F, in 1998, and that permitted a permissive interlocutory appeal of class certification decisions. If a class certification decision went against you, you could take it up to the appellate court. The appellate court could decide whether or not they wanted to hear it. And as class action jurisprudence has matured, fewer and fewer of these cases are getting heard on 23F appeals, and they only take about 20% of those cases now. So you still have what happens to the 80% of the cases that don't get heard. Do you just accept the certification decision, or do you try to figure out a way to get yourself into the appellate courts? And plaintiffs had come up with this interesting tactic. They lose the class certification motion, and then they say, well, we hereby voluntarily dismiss our claims with prejudice, with the reservation of rights that we want to still pursue the class action, and then purport to appeal their own voluntary dismissal and the own as an adverse judgment for review of the class certification issue. Defendants, of course, weren't having this. They would say, wait a second, this isn't a final judgment. You're not really dismissing your case because you're purporting to leave it open whether you can come back and litigate it, so then it's not 1291. Or if you're really saying that it is a final judgment, then you don't have a case or controversy anymore. You're the named plaintiffs, and you don't have Article III standing because you've agreed to voluntarily dismiss your claims, and there's no longer a case or controversy between you and the defendant. And in Baker versus Microsoft, Microsoft made all of those arguments, and the Ninth Circuit just sort of shrugged its shoulders and said, no, we're okay with this. We're going to call it a final judgment, and we're going to say there's Article III standing because there's still a dispute over the class certification question. They permitted the appeal to go forward. They granted class certification, and Microsoft appeals or seeks certiorari in the Supreme Court. And they get this in early 2016, or perhaps it was late 2015, not sure the exact date. But they get it, and that timing is interesting because shortly after cert was granted, Justice Scalia dies, and the court responds by delaying argument indefinitely. And there was a lot of speculation that this was one of those closely divided class action cases where Scalia was asserting his opposition to abuse of class actions, and that with his death, it would be a 4-4 issue. And though the court did delay argument well into October term 2016, in fact, until March, there were still an 8-justice panel at that time. And there was a lot of speculation that this would be an evenly decided case and that there would still be the issue unresolved. Most courts don't permit these sorts of appeals. The Ninth Circuit did. And it turned out not to be a close case at all. After argument, where the court was pretty clearly skeptical of the respondent's case, they unanimously reject the strategy of appealing these sorts of class certification denials. But they do it for different reasons. The 5-justice majority decision, led by Ginsburg and the liberal wing of the court plus Kennedy, says there's no appellate jurisdiction under Section 1291 because it's not a final judgment. This is just an attempt to try to get death knell all over again. And therefore, because we're resolving it under 1291, we don't need to reach the constitutional question. And the concern that the court raised was, you have Rule 23F there, and this is an attempt to completely undo it, that you have this balance permitting appellate courts to decide whether or not they want to take these appeals, and you're trying to get the interlocutory appeal anyway by claiming it's a final judgment, and you can't do that. And they noted the sort of asymmetry of this because if they did permit it to go forward, then plaintiffs would be able to basically get the interlocutory review of class certification by agreeing to these voluntary dismissals that weren't really voluntary dismissals and then getting appellate rights under 1291, but defendants would never have that opportunity or would not have that opportunity without taking tremendous risks to themselves. The other 3 justices also agreed that the plaintiffs couldn't do this. But they felt that it was a final decision under 1291. After all, there was a dismissal and there was nothing left of the case. That did make it a final decision, but they said that there was no Article III standing because once the parties agree to voluntarily dismiss the case, they're no longer adverse to the defendants. There's nothing to resolve between the plaintiffs and the defendants. That's between the court. While the plaintiffs may argue that there's a case or controversy over the class allegation, Justice Thomas wrote, quote, class allegations without an underlying individual claim do not give rise to a case or controversy. Those allegations are simply the means of invoking a procedural mechanism that enables the plaintiff to litigate his individual claims on behalf of a class. And that standing question is obviously very important in future litigation. To what extent does a class representative need standing? What extent can you divest a class representative of standing by mooting their individual claim? And to what extent can you certify a class where individual class members in the class may not have standing under Article III? All of these questions remain to be taken and seen, and there are people out there saying that this four-page concurrence provides some hints on those questions. What does all this mean? Well, this particular tactic for plaintiffs will disappear, but never fear, they have other tactics. Just because you lose class certification in one case, they still have options. They can bring class actions because after the Bayer decision of the Supreme Court in the last few years, plaintiffs can always bring a new class action in a new jurisdiction and seek class certification there because any new class representative isn't bound by the class certification decision of a different district court. So that sort of heads I win, tails don't count options are still out there, though that's obviously slightly more expensive for plaintiffs and is not available to them if, for example, these class actions are consolidated in a multi-district litigation. On Twitter, plaintiff's lawyer Jay Edelson suggested that the plaintiffs should have just tried their case for a few hundred dollars and won or lost and then appealed the lack of class certification. But again, it's not clear that they would have standing to do that if they won the case. If they've won the case and they've gotten their damages, is there still a case or controversy over the remaining class certification issues? And Justice Thomas would suggest that there isn't. So that's a risky strategy, and trials are expensive, and we may not see anybody try that, but perhaps Edelson PC will do that one day. There's legislation pending, H.R. 985, which passed the House and is pending in the Senate, though has yet to be marked up or in any hearings or any indication from the Senate Judiciary Committee that they're interested in it. But part of that legislation would make 23F appeals as of right, interlocutory appeals as of right, without the permissive indication, and that would benefit both plaintiffs or defendants on the decision of class certification.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.